Okay, we're holding on one of Duma Woman Bays, about 10 lines from the 10 lines from the bottom. Turn it up on him. Line begins with a light behind him. Okay, we learned yesterday about the going into about the ceremony on Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and the last thing we discussed was that there's a pasuk gives landmarks, which are those landmarks of how of where Har Gerizim and Har Eval are, or are they directions of how to get there? So continuing on this topic, turn it up on him. Kate said, "Over Yisrael Hayagin." How do the Jewish people cross the Yagin? Well, b'chol yom Aron nechea achas shnei degolim. Usually, up until that point, every time they traveled, the Aron would travel behind the first two degolim. So in Parshas Bamidbar, it describes that you had the degol of Machni Yehuda, Machni Reuven, then comes Bnei Gershon, Bnei Merari with the Mishkan. Then goes Machne Ephraim, then goes Bnei Kohos with the Aron and the Menorah and the rest of the Kalim, and then goes the last Machne. So usually the Aron, which apparently the idea was that the Aron would travel together with the other Kalim, and therefore it would go behind the first two Machnes.
Who decided
that? The Eved decided it's in Parshas Bamidbar. In Parshas Bamidbar, and then in Parshas Baloscha, it says how they actually carried it out. This time, when they crossed the Yarden, the Aron went ahead of everybody. As the pasuk says, "Hine Adon Abrit Adon Kol Ha'aretz Ovel Lefneichem." Behold, the Aron of the covenant of the master of all the earth, meaning the covenant that you have with the Eibishter, which is in the Aron, the Aseret Hadibros, the Luchos are in the Aron. That Aron Ovel Lefneichem is going to be passing in front of you, so to speak, to show the way. But there was one time previously that happened also in Parshas Baloscha, the first time they traveled. It says, "V'arein b'rit Hashem neseh l'fneihem derech shloshes yamim." The Aron traveled 3 days ahead of them. But that was a one-time thing, because that was, Rashi mentions over there, the plan was that they'd immediately go into Eretz Yisrael at that point. Except they messed up with Kiryas Ataiva and the Meraglim and everything, and wound up spending 40 years in the desert. That was when they left Har Sinai. The Aron is going ahead of them. They should have just gone 3 days and they'll be straight in Eretz Yisrael, but yeah. Another difference. Every other time the Levim carried the Aron. This time the Kohanim carried it. As the Pasuk says, when the feet of the Kohanim were carrying the Aron rested in the Yarden, then the waters of the Yarden split. So the Kohanim were carrying it. Tanya, and we learn through
the water going to slip with the Levim.
No, the point is the Kohanim. Well, why the Kohanim are carrying it? Wait, we'll talk in a second. Tanya, Rabbi Yosi, the Shloshim Kohanim, not the Kohanim as the Aron. There's three places in Tanakh where we find that the Kohanim carried the Aron. Kshavru as the Yarden, when they crossed the Yarden, or Kshavru as Yericho, when they encircled Yericho, where they went around it one time each day for 6 days, seven times on the seventh day, each time they had the Aron with them, and then on the seventh day they blew shofars and the walls collapsed. And the third time was when they returned it to its place. Now, what came to its place? Rashi and Tosfos both discuss over here that it means when they brought the Aron into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the permanent Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, in the Bayit tradition. Then the Kohanim carried it. Why are we calling that Shech Zerulim Koimai if it had never been there in the first place? So Rashi explains that what happened, what the history of the Aron after they came into Eretz Yisrael. So at first they had it, it was temporarily in the various army camps that they were in Gilgal, whatever. Eventually they set up the Mishkan in Shiloh, they brought the Aron there, that was the successor to the Mishkan in the Midbar, that was considered a full-fledged Mishkan for all purposes. So the Aron was there, that lasted 369 years. Then when the Plishtim destroyed it, so they captured the Aron, the famous story over there in Shmuel Aleph, what happened, all the disasters that happened to them, so they finally got wise and realized they had to return it. After that, they sent along golden images of mice, whatever, that's not Negev right now, but yeah. Anyway, from then on, until the Beis HaMikdash was built, the Aron was never together with the rest of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was set up in Noiv, and then later in Givon. And meanwhile, the Aron first was by the Plishtim for a few months. Then it was in Kiryas Yearim for a period for 20 years or so, until David tried to bring it to Yerushalayim. That was the attempt failed. We'll talk about it tomorrow. We'll talk about it tomorrow. That was the time, it's in that Torah, Parshas Shmini, when Uzzah tried to touch it because he thought it was slipping off and then got killed. So David sends it off to the house of Obed-Edom Agiti, one of the Levim. It's there a few months. Obed-Edom, his whole family is benched. as a chutz for the fact that they took good care of the Aron. So David made another attempt, and this time successfully brought it to Yerushalayim, but not put it in the Beit Hamikdash. The Beit Hamikdash wasn't built yet. He set up a temporary tent for it, and that tent would that remained where the Aron was until the Beit Hamikdash was built, and then it was brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So when we call it over here, Chesh Zul the Mekomos, so Rashi explains it means they're bringing it back to its place in the sense that it's being brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim for the first time since Shiloh was destroyed. Not the physical place, it's never been there before, because the physical place is in Yerushalayim and previously in Shiloh. And we mean Limkoimo, we mean to its proper place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Not the tent.
Not the tent, okay. Right. So Tosfos asks the question that the Pasuk mentions that the Levim carried it, and the answer is, okay, there are places where the Kohenim are called Levim, we learned that in Yevamos. Rabbi Akiva Eger points out that actually we have another time in Tanakh when it says that the Kohenim carried it. When David was running away from Absalom and leaving Yerushalayim, it says they brought the Aron along with him, and David tells them, don't bring the Aron with me, I don't know where I'm going to wind up, bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim. And he tells himself, Tzadik and Avyasa, the Kohenim, to bring it back to Yerushalayim. So the Horde of the Kohenim were carrying it there also. So okay, Rabbi Akiva Eger says that maybe that's also included in Kshech Zerul and Kohenim, they're bringing it back to its place rather than having it going wandering with David HaMelech. There's various other answers, including that maybe in that case the Levim carried it, it's just under the direction of the Kohenim. What does it mean more generally over here when we're saying over here that originally the Levim carried the Aron and then in these three cases the Kohenim carried it? The Rambam says it's a more general thing. The original idea was supposed to be that the Kohenim are always going to carry the Aron, except when the Kohenim started out, you only had five of them. You only had Aaron and his four sons. And two of them were killed, and then two of them, not even Avir, were killed on the eighth day of the Miluim. So you only had three Kohenim. Practically speaking, you don't have enough Kohenim to carry Aaron. So therefore, temporarily, the rule was that the Levim should carry it in the desert. Once there were enough Kohenim, by the time they were entering Eretz Yisrael, 40 years later, they have enough Kohenim, and therefore, from now on, the Kohenim should carry it. The Ramban strongly disagrees with that. He says, for one thing, so you're telling me a mitzvah in the Torah changes. First, the Torah tells us it's the Levim, and then it changes it to the Kohenim. So the Ramban says that no, we mean only in these specific cases that the Gemara is listing over here. Other than that, it was usually Levim. Whenever they had to carry the Aron, usually it would be Levim, with only these three exceptions. Okay. The Kivin Shinitbulu Ragla Kohenim Amayim continues the Braisa when the feet of the Kohenim were carrying the Aron dipped into the water of the Yarden. Chazra Mayim Lacharem, the water turned backwards. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Chavoy Noisei Aron Ad HaYarden, as those who carried the Aron, the Kohenim, came till the Yarden. Vayamdra Mayim HaYarden Milamayla, Vayamdra Mayim, the water stood, HaYarden Milamayla, the water that was coming from above. Now remember, there's a difference between Kriyas Yamsuf and the splitting of the Yarden. Kriyas Yamsuf is taking place in a sea. There's no current over there, really. I mean, you have, you know, there's no one direction in which the current flows. So by Kriyas Yamsuf, the water had to be blocked off on both sides to make a clear path in the middle for B'nai Yisrael to go through. Here we're talking about a river. So a river has current. It has a direction of flow. So you stop the water in one place, and basically, automatically, you have an empty area. So the water that was flowing from up above, from upstream, stood up as one pillar. Okay, the Kabbal Govan Shamayim, so how tall was that pillar? Shnei Mosem Mil, Kenegan Machne Yisrael. It was 12 mil tall, which is the size of Machne Yisrael. In other words, Rashi, 12 mil high, yes. So Rashi explains, in other words, the idea basically is like this. 12 mil is the size of Machne Yisrael, 12 by 12 mil. They passed through the Yarden, Rashi saying, in the same formation as when they camped. So therefore, they need a 12-mil width. So therefore, what you have is, therefore, so the water, as soon as the Kohenim stepped foot in the Yarden, the water on one side, on the upstream side from where they're going to cross, stopped. And it started piling up until it reaches a height of 12 mil. That is all the water that would have normally been flowing in that 12 mil in the river. And then they all cross through, and then once they're through, then the water comes back down and continues flowing. Now, Shaw argues with that on various grounds, including that, first of all, I mean, that doesn't really mean Chazra Mayim Lacharem. That's not the water flowed backwards, that the water stops in one place as if like a dam had been put up. What good does it do to have it stop for 12 mil? I mean, the Gemara is going to mention this point in a second, actually, that you need enough time for the people to be able to cross through and for the various things that the Gemara is going to describe that happen during the crossing to happen. The Marshal learns a little. The Marshal, we'll see. We'll have the whole description of what happened during that crossing. The Marshal learns differently that what it is the water actually flowed down. There was water that filled up that 12 mil that flowed backward. So it didn't really, it stood up as a pillar, as the Gemara is saying, but it's not really the main point that it stood up as a tremendously tall pillar. So the Marshal learns not Kamen Goven Chamayim, not how tall is the column of water, but how wide was the open area that was opened up in the water, and the answer is 12 mil.
And the water reversed.
So the water reversed course to leave a dry area. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda said. Amalei Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, the Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon says, that doesn't work. If you're saying that you only have 12 mil, l'dvarecha adam kalem mayim kalem, according to your logic, think of it, what moves faster, person or water? Heavy I am column. Water moves faster than a person. Him can boy mind the shade for nice. And in that case, if the water was only 12 mil, then you're gonna have it's gonna drown them. Meaning, in other words, it takes time for the people to cross. Water moves faster than people. You're telling me, looking at it according to Rashi's point of view, that you have a 12 mil high column of water, and now the point is, as soon as they're getting up crossing, and now the water is starting to come down, but the water is gonna come down faster than people are gonna get across.
It could, but if
Rabbi Yehuda's point, according to Rashi, is the reason why you have a 12 mil high column of water is because all that is the water that normally would have been flowing in that 12 mil of Yarden, then there's no reason to assume it should have been any more. Okay, Tosfos points out on Amud Beis, maybe it's a little more than 12, because you do have to allow the time for the things that it says, that the Gemara says took place during the crossing, but still, you still have the problem on the face of it.
It's not in everything.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Yeah. That's what Rabbi Yehuda might have to say. But actually, the other argument is, we talked yesterday about them going, about when they went to Har Gerizim and Har Eval. We talked about when did that take place, and second of all, where are Har Gerizim and Har Eval? If we say that Har Gerizim and Har Eval are inland, near Shechem, as we discussed yesterday, not like Rabbi Elazar, who says that they set up two mounds of dirt near the river and called them Har Gerizim and Har Eval. But if we mean the real Har Gerizim and Har Eval near Shechem, and if we furthermore assume that all that took place on the same day when they crossed the Yarden, which there is such an opinion, then it means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, yes, they moved very fast. So in that case, fine. In that case, then the answer to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon is, in this case, people do move faster than water. So therefore, it's not a problem.
While there was a nest that the water accumulated, why shouldn't there be a nest that the water slowly decreased, very slowly, to let them the time without...
But even so, you're still going to have the water is going to be by their feet or whatever. If they're going to be crossing on dry land, they need to be crossing. Okay, yes, there is the idea that maybe the water would flow more slowly when it's descending from the thing than when it's normally flowing in the current. Marshall points out that also there are some rivers that have faster currents than others. Fine, all fine and dandy, but still, you still have the problem that if it's 12 mil and 12 mil, then you don't really have much of a margin for error, especially considering, again, that there's a speech that Yeshua gave them while they're crossing. They have to take 12 stones and set them up as a memorial over there. So Rabbi Yehuda might answer that, yes, in this case, Adam Kal. We'll talk about that more on the base. But for now, Ella, so no, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says, Melamed, so no, this teaches us, Shreimai Mikdoshin Ba'olin, the water was actually accumulating and piling up, Kippin Agave Kippin, like arches on top of arches. It means, and the notes in the Art School Gemara point out maybe why we're comparing it to arches. Maybe tackle like every wave that comes downstream freezes in place, and then another wave on top of it, and so on and so forth. Yosim Shlosh Meisim Mil, until it reached a height of more than 300 mil, which would be about 200 miles. No, 200 miles is not quite out of space yet, but yeah. Okay. Ad Shiroes and Komachim Mizrach HaMayim, until all the kings in the east and west all saw it. The Pasuk says, when all the kings of the Amori who are on the west side of the Yarden, and all the kings of the Knanim who live near the sea, near the Mediterranean, when they heard that Hashem dried up the waters of the Yarden in the face in the presence of Bnei Israel until they were able to cross, their hearts melted, and they didn't have any more spirit to go and oppose the fight, to go and oppose and fight the Jewish people anymore. V'af Rochav HaZoyna, Amr L'Shlucha Yeshua, and in fact, we find that Rochav HaZoyna had told Yeshua's messengers, the two miraglim that he sent early in Sefer Yeshua, Sakhtar HaParashat Shlach, She says to them, Kisha Mayinu, this is before Kriya, this is before the splitting of the Yagin, but this is 40 years after Kriya Yamsuf, and she's telling them what an effect it had by them. Kisha Mayinu, Esa Shahuvish Hashem Esne Yamsuf, we heard how Hashem dried up the waters of Yamsuf. Ochtiv, and the prophet continues, Vanishma Mayimach Lavainu, we heard, and our hearts melted, but like Koma Oid Vagoma, and then no spirit stood up in any person anymore, we were so terrified. So you see the same effect that Kriya Yamsuf had on them, the same effect the splitting of the Yagin had on them. The Marsha points out that's the point of mentioning about the 300 mil height of the water, according to the laws of Reb Shimon, and the fact that all the kings of East and West saw it. If they just heard it, like the pasuk is saying, it wouldn't have made such an impact on them. Same thing with Kriyas Yamsuf. If they only heard of it, it wouldn't have terrified them so much. By Kriyas Yamsuf, what did they see? The famous medrash that all the water and all the bodies of water and all the cups and everything split as well. So everybody realized what's going on. And here, the fact that they see this towering wall of water. So that they saw it, that's what terrified them. 12 mil would have been enough to see for some distance, but not all the kings of East and West, not all the way until the Mediterranean, let's say, yeah. Not that I know of. Okay. Yeah. While they're still in the Yarden, you need to know for what purpose you're crossing the Yarden. That is, it's on condition that you dispossess, that you kick out the inhabitants of the land, the Knanim, from your presence. Shenema, the apostle says, you need to dispossess, you need to kick out all the inhabitants of the land from before you. And he continues, if you do that, then good. And if not, then the water is going to come and drown Oisechem. So my oisechem, what does the word oisechem mean? It means oisi ve'eschem. It means me and you. So in other words, I'm in this as well. So one idea is, Tosfos quotes over here from the Yerushalmi, that another thing that happened while they crossed the Yarden is that is when they accepted on themselves hanistoris. Up until then, it was hanistoris la'ashem alekeinu v'anigos l'anul v'aneinu. When a person does an aveda in secret and nobody knows about it, then we're not responsible, only the Eivishter is responsible. We're responsible for our niglois when we see somebody doing an aveira. Once they cross the yard, then that's when our ravos kicked in. That's when Koyisol, our raven Zelozeh, kicked in. That now, even if a person does an aveira in secret, then everybody is held responsible because they should have taught everybody that not to do that. And that is why later on we find that when Achan took stuff from Yericho that he wasn't supposed to, everybody else ended up suffering for it in the next battle. No, they didn't know about it, that's the point. But it was their responsibility to make sure that nobody's committing avedis even in secret. So what happened? He took some stuff from Yericho. All of it was supposed to be either destroyed or given to the treasury of the Mishkan, as the case may be. Achan saw some stuff and liked it, and then took it for himself. He might have a whole discussion about it in Sanhedrin, so we'll get to it in a year and a half or so, Bez Hashem. Two years from whatever, how long it is. So the upshot is, the next battle that they had against Ai, 36 Jews were killed. And everybody was devastated because when we're fighting these wars, they what?
He lost 7 kids.
7 kids?
He lost his kids? No, they died.
No. Huh? I think you're thinking of a different story. No, there's 36 people were killed, and there's an opinion that among them was Yorub ben Menashe, who was a tremendous son of Chacham. Whatever it is, anyway... Oh, that's still by Sayyidi, that's a different story, yeah. It doesn't say 7 anyway, just says his oldest, from his oldest to his youngest. But that's a different story. So everybody's devastated, what's going on over here, when we're conquering the land and we're being led by the Eivishter, we're not supposed to have any casualties until the Eivishter tells Yeshua, this is what happened. Achan, Eivishter doesn't name names. Eivishter says, look, I'm not a Baal Lashon Hara, make a goyer or you'll figure it out. And then Akitzur, they figure out, they it lands on Achan, Yeshua gets them to confess, and everything develops from there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the Gemara has a number of derogatory things to say about Achan over there, yeah. Okay, anyway. So Oisi v'eschem, so I'm part of this Arevus also. If you don't agree that you're going to dispossess, that you're going to work on removing all the 7 nations from Canaan, then I'm going to be involved as well. There's not only you're going to be punished, but so am I as well, because Koyi Tzor and Zelazah.
But
already went through the water.
No, they're in the water at the time.
I've interpreted for what's going to happen in the
that you have to accept on yourself now that you're going to do that. And, actually, one of the Parshim says that the reason why you have to tell them when they're in the water is it has to be Tnai Kodim L'maaseh. It has to be that the condition comes before the action. If they're already in Eretz Yisrael, then it's, so to speak, too late for the Eved to put conditions on them. So it has to be before they actually cross into Eretz Yisrael proper.
Saying they were not in the water, that's right.
No, they're saying, but they're in the riverbed, though.
The river.
They're as they're crossing, what Yeshua is telling them this. Odin by Yarden, also while they're still in the Yarden, Amar Lahem Yeshua, Yeshua tells them what it says in the Pasuk, Harim Lachem Ish Evan Achas Ashikmai, each person, he designates 12 people, one for each shevet. Each of you should pick up one stone and put it on its shoulder and carry it. L'mispa Shivte Yisrael, 12 for the 12 Shvatim. And you're going to set them up, at where the Kohanim were standing, you're going to set them up in the riverbed as a memorial of the crossing of the Yarden. And actually, the Mabit says on this, it's sort of like a mezuzah for Eretz Yisrael. Every time somebody comes, every time in the future somebody crosses the Yarden to come into Eretz Yisrael, they'll pass by these stones and remember what they accepted on themselves there. It's 3,000 years later. I doubt they're still there.
They're big stones.
We'll see soon. Yeah, they're big stones. Yeah. And the pasuk continues, in order that this should be a sign among you, when your children ask in a future time, what are these stones for you? You'll tell them that this reminds us of the splitting of the Yarden.
In the middle of the Yarden.
First of all, it could be that they're large enough. They made enough of a pile of them that they'd stick. It's not so deep, yeah. They can make them,
you know,
they'll stick up a little above the surface. But yeah, I mean, in 3,000 years, it's unlikely they're still in their exact spot anymore, yeah.
So then why is it supposed to say that?
Okay, so for a period of time, it helped. I mean, you know, there's also, you know, maybe if from then until now, continuously Jews have been in charge of Eretz Yisrael, then, you know, they would have made sure that this memorial always stayed there. You know, once you have Goyish Conqueror, you know, what do they have any interest in it? Yeah. Okay, anyway. Meaning, simon labonim sha'avru avas es yarden. Meaning that these signs are going to be a simon for the children to remember that their fathers crossed the yarden. Another thing, oidem bayarden, again, while they're still in the yarden, amar lahem Yeshua, another pasuk, su lachem mizem etecha yarden, pick up for yourselves from the yarden, mimasav ragle ha'koyinim, from the place where the koyinim's feet were standing, hachein, prepare shtei nasir abonim, 12 stones, you should carry them with you. You should place them in the lodging place, in the spot where we camp tonight. So this is a second set of stones. In other words, later on, the Gemara is going to discuss that there were actually three sets of stones, but right now we're dealing with only two of them. So you would think maybe the pasuk means that every day they have to carry them from one place to another, wherever they're camping, from night to night. No, you bring them to the first place where we're going to camp tonight, which was Gilgal. So they set them up. They set up these 12 stones in Gilgal. Okay. How big were these stones? Amar Rav Yehuda, Abba Chalafter, Rav Elazar ben Nasya, v'Chananya ben Chachinoi. These three tanoim. There's a different gears over here. It wasn't Rav Yehuda, it was Rav Yossi, and Abba Chalafter then would be his own father. The Rav Yossi Sam and Mishnah is Rav Yossi ben Chalafter. Anyway. So these three tanoim, Omdu Alois and Avonim, they figured out, they looked at these stones. These stones were still existent in their time, were still extant in their time. So they, Omdu Al doesn't literally mean they stood on them. It means they considered them. It means they figured out their size. The Shirum, Kol Achas V'Achas Shkula Ka'avoyim Sa'. They figured out that each one weighs about 40 Sa'. 40 Sa' is, in terms of the weight of water, a Sa' is really a measure of volume. In terms of the weight of water, 40 saw is, depending on which set of measurements you use, but it's commonly given as something like 700 pounds, a little under 200 gallons. That's the shear of a mikveh. So each of these stones was about that size.
200 pounds?
No. 700? About if it was an equivalent amount of water, it would be 700 pounds or so. I mean, stones are heavier than water, you know. Stones have a specific gravity about double that of water. So you're talking each stone weighs about 1,400 pounds, let's say. Right. Respectable size, yeah. And we're saying each person carried them. And Ugmiri, and we know by tradition, Tuna, the madly initial kaspe, that a load that a person is able to pick up himself and put on his shoulder, is only tilted to tuna havi. It's only a third of what he can carry if somebody else puts it on him. Mikana, tamachashav la'eshkol. So based on this, you can calculate the weight of the cluster of grapes that the meraglim took back from Eretz Yisrael, where there were a bunch of them carrying it together. So here, with the stones, each person can only carry a stone of 40 sa'ah. But when you have a bunch of people working together, then it's not just you have, the Gemara is going to say that 8 people carried this this cluster. It's not just you multiply 40 times 8. You have more than that. Each one can carry 3 times as much. When other people are helping him lift it up, then he can by himself. Shanem, the Pasuk says, Vayisa'ur b'moit b'shnayim, the Pasuk says about this cluster of grapes that the Meraglim brought back. It says they carried it on a pole with 2. So when the pasuk says that it was on a pole, any adash b'shnayim, obviously that means 2 people were carrying it. Necessarily, something carried on a pole involves 2 people carrying it.
You carry on a pole for 700 pounds of weight.
They used to, and there was a common thing in those days. But wait, we're going to say it was even more than that. But wait, we're going to say it was more than one pole. Hold on. But I'll tell you, the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia, for example, that a common thing in those days was if you have to carry a big jug of wine, a big barrel of wine from one place to another, you'd tie it to a pole, and one person would hold each end, and they'd carry it. And those things could weigh, those things, especially when they're full, could weigh a good couple hundred pounds.
But not 700 pounds.
Okay, but, you know, maybe this cluster of grapes. I mean, again, we're talking volume, we're not talking weight, so maybe, whatever. Anyway. So if you're carrying it with a pole, necessarily that means 2 people are carrying it. So what does it mean when it says with 2? It means v'shnei moites. It means 2 poles. So what does that mean? It wasn't just 2 poles. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, turgeni, v'turgeni, deturgeni. It means there was, there's several different explanations among the Mephoshim what the word turgeni means. Rashi says that turgeni means a load. So there was a load, and there was a load under the other load. Basically, what it means is, it actually explains, they had a framework of poles. It wasn't just, as we would think from the pulpit, it was 1 or 2 poles, and they put the cluster on top of that. According to Rashi, what it would be is, there were 2 parallel poles, which 4 people held them, one on each end of each pole. And then you had four other poles, with 4 more people carrying them. It actually says diagonally under the other one. So in other words, you had 2 like this and 2 like this. Another four. So altogether, that's 8 people. Two like this, sort of. On Rashi says balaxin. There are other Mephoshim explain that balaxin can be crosswise to them. Tosfos has yet another explanation that turgeni actually quotes from Rabbeinu Hananel that turgeni means a balance beam, like from a balance scale. So therefore, what it means is that they took 2 poles, they wove ropes between them to make like a bed for the eshkol to sit on, and then they had at the end of the 2 long poles, they have shorter poles where each person, in order to help distribute the load, and now you have those 4 of those shorter poles, one each at the end of 2 of the long poles, and therefore you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people carrying it. There's a vast number of other explanations in the Mitzvah Gemara and in the back in the Yalkut Biyurim. They have 14 different diagrams among different Mephoshim of what the Seder was, how they carried it, and what the turgeni, that turgeni to turgeni business means.
No wheels, no carriages.
Tosfos also, by the way, brings an interesting possibility. There may have been, here we're going to talk about, the Gemara is going to say in a second, that 8 people carried this cluster of grapes, which still goes to show how big it is. The Yerushalmi brings up a possibility, according to Rabbi Akiva, since the pasuk starts by saying ish echad, one person literally means one person for each shevet. But Rabbi Akiva, in some places, that explains that when the pasuk repeats something, it actually means repeat the number. So it doesn't mean there were 12 meraglim; it means there were 24 meraglim, according to Rabbi Akiva. And in that case, maybe what you would have is 16 of them were carrying this cluster of grapes. In which case, you have to have even more poles involved over here. Which a lot of Mephoshim deal with the question, so why does the total list only 12? And various other, among the various answers that are given are Moshe Rabbeinu picked 12, as we'll talk about in a moment, and the Jewish people, each Shevet themselves, picked another person. So altogether, according to Rabbi Akiva, there may have been 24. Or that you have the 12 that are listed in the Pasuk, and they sent along with them also the Nesiim that I mentioned back at the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, that's another 12.
The Eved couldn't make a nest, it would be
no need for all these people carrying such a huge weight.
So the Zohar actually, well, no, the point is how big the cluster was, but the Zohar actually puts it a little, the Zohar puts it much differently. We're going to say in a second, the Gemara is going to say over here in a second, that Yeshua and Kolev did not carry any of the fruit for reasons that we'll talk about in a second. But the Zohar says it the other way around. The Shnayim that it says, by Zohar, the Shnayim means Yeshua and Kolev carried it. So how does that fit with our Gemara over here? So Shachar LaTorah talks about the Beis HaMedrash that says actually originally the Meraglim didn't want to bring back any fruit until Yeshua and Kolev threatened them, that they better. So then what happened? So the Shachar LaTorah explains that what happened basically was the cluster was too heavy for anybody to lift. Well, at first, only Yeshua and Kolev could lift it. And they davened that we don't really want to be the ones carrying it back for reasons that the Gemara is going to say in a second. Instead, let it be light enough that the other Meraglim should be able to carry it. And then it became lighter, B'derech Neis, but it still took 8 people to carry it. Or 16, according to the Bakiva and the Yerushalayim. But at least Yeshua during Kolev didn't have to. So what is it? Okay, so how does this work? Shmoyna Nosu Eshkalachot. 8 of the Meraglim carried this one cluster of grapes, which shows how big it is, by the way. That's the whole point the Gemara is mentioning over here, is to show, if you figure out, based on the figures the Gemara is giving, that whole cluster had a volume of 960 sah, which comes out to a few tons. Yeah. Echad Nasa Riman, Vechad Nasa Teina. One of the other Meraglim carried a pomegranate, because the Pasuk also said they brought back from the pomegranates and from the figs. So the implication, the Gemara says, is one of each. One pomegranate, Vechad Nasa Teina. The 10th Meragl brought back a fig. Yeshua Kolev by Nasa Klum. Yeshua Kolev didn't carry anything. Why? He bought the same of Meshuda Hashivi. One possibility is because they were important, so it would be like beneath their dignity to carry it. He bought the same of Shalahi, bought the Eitzah. The other possibility is because they were not involved in that plot. Because why Taka the Meraglim bringing back a huge cluster? So Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk because, now on one level, I mean, Moshe told them to bring back some of the fruit. But they had a bad intention with it. They wanted to show the Jewish people, Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk as well, that, look, you know, this is a weird kind of land we're going into. It's got giants in it. It's even got giant fruit. The fruit is not normal for people our size. So therefore, Yeshua and Kolev didn't want to get involved. Sicha in Chelek Amechet, where that analyzes the differences between the difference in wording between our Gemara and the way Rashi says it on the Pasuk, what exactly is the idea behind Yeshua and Kolev not taking anything. Part of the idea is Moshe had said that fruit should be brought back, but he didn't say specifically who has to be doing it. So given that Yeshua and Kolev realized that the Meraglim had bad intentions with it, then they washed their hands of it. They realized, you know, what Moshe wanted will still be accomplished, fruit will be brought back, but we don't want to be involved because they're going to be using it to try to undercut Moshe. Okay. Going back now to the crossing of the Yarden, Pligi Bar of Ami and Rabbi Yitzchok Napcha, so Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchok Napcha argue about how the crossing of the Yarden was accomplished. The Divir of Yehuda, pointed of Yehuda, which we said before, pointed of Yehuda, the water only piled up to 12 mil and then started descending. Then it means Kachana Yosanavu. It means that they passed through the Yarden according to the same formation in which they camped, in the same 12 by 12 mil square. Although Tosfos has a long discussion of it, including some math, to say that they may not have been actually in that exact formation. Among other things, the whole bed of the Yarden wouldn't fit them all if they were in that 12 by 12 mil formation. The whole Yarden, in normal times, is only 50 amos wide. And even, okay, the Radal points out it was during the spring where the river is much bigger, but it's still not big enough to fit a whole 12 by 12 mil square. And you can't... And on average, it's about 50 amos wide. There's various midrashim that mention that. I don't know. Have you ever measured it?
No, I haven't measured it, but I've seen it.
Okay. Depends what part of it, I guess. We're talking about, remember, we're talking about fairly far down the street. We're talking about close to the Dead Sea, which is where they crossed, yeah. Anyway, so Tosfos has a long, elaborate calculation of it. For one thing, Tosfos says that ultimately, when we're saying over here that they went Kahana Yosan, it may mean, though, that they were crowded together. They didn't have all the open space that they usually had in the Machna between one tent and the next, and between one area of the camp and the next. They would have all crowded together, but it still would have been in the same basic formation, these Shavatim on the east, these on the north, etc., as when they camped. The Divrei of Elazar ben Shimon, according to Elazar ben Shimon, who says that the water piled up to more than 300 mil, then they walked through single file. But that's why they needed, that's why the water needed to be so high in order to allow them time to cross through safely before the water starts descending.
Because they were stretched.
Because they're stretched out in a long line going a single file. Okay, Teresa said not necessarily single file, maybe a few people at a time, but at least whatever, not a huge group at the same time, yeah. 300 mil.
It's the same way. It's going to come down. It'll come down the same way.
Okay, but it's a difference in how the nace was accomplished. Exactly. Okay, there's explanations that the Maharal, for example, talks about the symbolism of the number 300. The Gemara says, the Gemara mentions there's something about the Gemara in Bava Basra, actually, Tosfos quotes it over here, that says that the clouds are three parsa above the ground. So there's we're saying time, we're multiplying that by 100, which represents like the ultimate perfection, showing that the nace was you know, to the nth degree, basically. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. That's one way of looking at it. The Chad Omer, and the other, between these two, we had Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchok Napcha. So one of them said that you have this machloikus, that we must say that Rav Yehuda and Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon are arguing about the formation in which they crossed the Yarden. The Chad Omer, the other one, says, no, Bein Mar, Bein Mar, Kachan Yasin Avru. No, everybody might agree they went in formation. The difference is, Mar Sava Adam Kalim, Mar Sava Mayim Kalim. Rav Yehuda might hold that people go faster than water. Again, you have the idea of different currents of water go at different speeds. In this case, the Pasuk itself says they hurried and crossed. Rabbi Yeshua especially says that, Rabbi Yehuda especially says that they were able to go on that day all the way to Har Gerizim and Har Abel and back, which is a 120 mil round trip, so then they could go faster than the water. Well, Mar Sava Mayim Kalim, whereas Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon would take the view that water is faster and therefore the water has to be piled up to 300 mil in order for them to be able to all cross.
Okay.
It's more likely. I mean, you have to do it elevated, do it really can high. Okay. Going back now to the Meraglim, so now this is kind of a digression because we were talking about the stones in the Yarden, and eventually we're going to get back to that, and eventually we're going to get back to Har Gerizim and Har Abel. Meanwhile, the Gemara is going to go into a few digressions and then digressions of digressions. So going back to the Meraglim, first it says, Shlach Lecha Anashim, the Eibishter tells Moshe, send for yourself men. It means, Rashi mentions that on the Pasuk, send it according to your own das. Because I'm not commanding you. They want that. Me daitcha, according to your le daitcha, Rashi says that on the Pasuk, according to your own das. It's up to you, basically. I'm not telling you to send them, but if the Jewish people are saying send them, fine, I'm not going to object. Because does a person choose something bad for himself? Which means, so Rashi says, meaning, in other words, The whole thing of the Meraglim ended in disaster. If the Eivishter had commanded it, the Eivishter knows the future, how would he have commanded something which he knows in advance is going to end up as a disaster? Marsha says rather that the meaning of the Gemara is that I chose a very good land for the Jewish people. What makes them think that they have to go check it out? They should know that they have the best thing. But if they want to send, fine, let them send.
It's not the best. Thanks for that.
Okay, but yeah. Still, the person doesn't choose a bad thing for himself there. The Heinrich Tiff, this is why, when Moshe tells over the story in Parshat Zvarim as part of his speech to the Jewish people, giving them Musa for everything they did wrong, he says, "Vayitap be'enei hadavar," the matter was good in my eyes. Amar Shlokesh be'enei, for like be'enei shamokam, it means it was good in my eyes, but not in Eivishter's eyes. So you should have realized the point. Moshe is telling them as part of that speech. You should have realized once the Eivishter doesn't approve of it, you should have realized, you know what, never mind, it's not a good idea. Because Moshe is telling them, I'm doing it on my own. So then, okay, the Sichus where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea of it is that it was supposed to be, this is going to be the beginning of that they're doing Avodah V'Koyach Atzmam, and therefore the Eivishter left it in Moshe's hands, because if it works out, it should have been that it works out after all, and then it would have been the first example where they're doing something on their own, and where they're doing Avodah on their own rather than being spoon-fed everything by the Eivishter. Okay, but, yeah. Okay. I don't know. Okay. Plus, it continues in Moshe's speech there in Parshas Devarim. He describes how do they want to send the mission. V'yachburu lonu asa'aretz. Literally, v'yachburu means they should dig out, like spies do. But why that expression? Especially because in Parshas Shlach, when it first describes the Meraglim, it doesn't say that. It says v'yasuru asa'aretz kinam. So, amr p'chiba abba. What? No, yeah. Amr p'chiba abba. Meraglim l'neskabner elo b'oshita shalot Yisrael. The Meraglim only meant for the embarrassment of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi actually says not the Meraglim, but rather the fact that when the Jewish people asked for Meraglim, they intended to denigrate Eretz Yisrael. Marshal says it means the Meraglim themselves. Why? Because here we have the expression they should dig out the land. You have another pasuk. Yeah, that the shorish chofar. I mean, embarrassed. The chofar alavon over shacham. The sun will be ashamed. The moon will be embarrassed. This is talking about Mashiach times, not the sun and moon themselves, but the people who the goyim will worship the sun and the moon. So we see that, yeah, the shorish v'yachru can mean embarrassment, humiliation. Yeah. So that's the idea. In other words, Moshe, the Eivishter said, I'm leaving it up to you. So Moshe decided, okay, you know, it could be avoided because of Hasmite.
They wanted to embarrass the Eivishter.
Yeah, okay. And also Moshe, this V'yachru Lanos Oreth is in Moshe's description of it 40 years later. When they originally came to him, they didn't necessarily say these words, V'yachru Lanos Oreth. I mean, Moshe's paraphrasing. But why is he paraphrasing it in that way? Because it turns out that they had bad intentions. Yeah.
He knew that.
Well, he may not have known it at the time. Actually, we're going to see soon. We're going to have the whole discussion when we get to the fact that Moshe is davening for Yeshua to be saved from the advice of the spies. What's going on with that? So wait.
40 years after he sent the Marvel, what is it? Fall dead. What's the point of
Because he's telling the next generation, you have to realize what your fathers did wrong and make sure not to repeat the same mistakes. The pasuk lists the names of the 12 medagrim. We have the following tradition in our hands from our ancestors. That the medagrim were all named after what they did. In other words, all their names somehow indicate what they ended up doing wrong. However, we only know how to darshan one. One of the Meraglim was named Stur ben Michal, the one from Shevet Asher, was named Stur ben Michal. Why is he called that? Stur Shasasa Maitev Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, because he contradicted the word, he contradicted the deeds of the Eivishter. So Rashi says it means that he contradicted the Eivishter. He claimed Kav Yachol that the Eivishter is a liar. Marshal says it means that he contradicted the fact. He ignored all the Nisim of Yitzhak Mitzrayim and everything and pretended like it never happened. Yeah. And Michal Sha'asa Asmei Mach, and he's called the son of Michal because he made himself weak. Himself is a euphemism over here. It means that he's claiming Kaviyach that the Eivishter is weak, as tomorrow we'll say tomorrow.
What does it mean, mostly carrying himself?
What?
Even the Balabar can bring himself.
Yeah, we'll relax. We'll get to it tomorrow, Ben Zeshem. Let's not run ahead of ourselves. We have enough to cover on this block. Okay. So it means that the Eivishter can't control things over there. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We also have another one that we can dash in. Nachbi ben Vossi. Another one of them. Yeah. From Shevet Naphtali. Why is he called that? Nachbi shehechbi dvarav shalakadosh baruch hu, because he hid the Eivishter's words, meaning he didn't say things the way they really are. It's a good land, and he pretended like it's not. And Vofsi Shapisa Almadiyos of Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, because he stepped over, he jumped over the Midas of the Eivishter again, and he didn't say them the way they are. So what does all this mean? There's a Sicha in Chelek Yudches where the Rebbe analyzes this in some detail. I mean, first of all, what do we mean, Onu Loi also be Yedeinu Ela Echad? Well, we don't know how to darshan the rest of them. And then Medrash Tanchuma, in fact, you have Darashas on the names of almost all the Meraglim, or even all of them, whatever. So and then what's Rav Yechanan adding that what okay we can come up with another one so but you know but Omer Rav Yechanan doesn't imply that he's arguing, it implies he's saying a separate statement. So basically the Rebbe it's a long and very fascinating sicha. The gist of it is that what we're saying is yes, all of them were named Al Shem Ma'aseihem. But for most of them, the mistake that they made then is not something that's so relevant. The mistake each of them made, with the more general mistake was the famous thing of Siddur, they all thought they should stay in the Midbar and do more Avodah Baruchnius than Avodah Begashmius in Eretz Yisrael. Each of them had their own take on it, basically. Most of those takes are not so relevant to us. They're not things that we have the same problem. The only one that's the Masertus Yadenu Me'avisenu, where we have to be careful of the same mistake that our ancestors was, is the kind of mistake that Stur ben Michal did, which is Stur that he's tearing. Stur means that it can also mean tearing down. Like the Eivishter wants the Dira B'Tachtarim, and he's tearing that down and claiming we don't need a Dira B'Tachtarim. All we need is Ruchnius. And Ben Michal, that the Cha'asa Atmei Moch, how does this come about? Because the Eivishter Kaviyachol made himself weak, made himself look weak by making that there's a world that seems to be separate from the Eivishter.
So that,
So that kind of mistake is what we have to be careful of. And then Rabbi Yochanan says, "Af anu noimar." There's another one which may not have been so relevant to them on their level, but it's more relevant to us. Nachbi ben Bofsi, that the his mistake of thinking that of hiding the words of the Edishter and stepping over the Edishter's midas, meaning in other words, thinking like the world exists on its own, like that the words of the Edishter that keep the world running are not important, and then the midas of the Edishter that keep the world running are not important. That's not a mistake that they made in their time, but that's a mistake that we can make in our time that we have to be careful of.
They
probably would darshan them l'shvach. Yeah, there's a lot of different mafarshim about this. Yeah, one possibility is that maybe they were given these names only retrospectively after the whole thing failed. Yeah.
They did. They want the same ruchnius, not going out to Israel. We want the same gashmius, and again, not going out to Israel.
Also true. Yeah. Okay. Let's continue. And the pasuk says they went up in the Negev and he came to Chevron. And they came. Amr Abba Malamach Pirash Kolev Matas Meraglim. It means that Kolev left the council, the group of the Meraglim. The Holach Minishtakeach of Tivrei Ovis, and he went to bow down and then daven by the caver of the Ovis, the Chevron. Wasn't so far. They're in the Negev. Chevron is in that general vicinity also. They're passing through all of Eretz. It's close enough. They're passing through Eretz Yisrael by Yeshuvah Mitzrayim, which they said, it's 40 days walking the length of Eretz Yisrael. So at some point, they were near Hebron, so Kolev took the opportunity to get away and go to Maris Machpelah. Amalahen, he says, Avoisai Bakshual Arachmin, my fathers, begged for Rachmanus on me, She'enotam Atas Meraglim, that I should be saved from the advice of the Meraglim. Now, why only him? What about Yeshua? Vabikish Moshe Olav Rachmin, Moshe had already davened for Rachmanus for him. It says earlier that Moshe renamed Hashem ben Nun Yehoshua. Why? He said, may Hashem save you from the advice of the spies. So what's going on with that? So one idea is that yes, even when they're first going, Moshe didn't know, of course, that they were Rishayim. In fact, when they first left, well, it's a sharp shade of how Rashi says on the Pesukim over there. But Moshe had his misgivings about the whole thing, and therefore, just to be on the safe side, he davened for Yehoshua.
They
wouldn't see Israel, but still, you know, that's the point. That's the point of Chassidus about the mistake that they made on their level. But
was it a mistake, or they were really
trying? Well, it started off as a mistake, and then it ended up with actual Chira, what Yaakov quoted before, Balabayit and Yafalosiyah. But there's a vast number of Mephoshim that discuss the question, so why did Moshe only daven for Yeshua? Why not for the other Meraglim? Among the answers are that Yeshua, Targum Yonason says that Yeshua was very humble. A humble person is more likely to be swept along with the crowd, but he doesn't want to go against them. So therefore, Moshe has to especially daven for him. There's the idea that Yeshua is descended from Shevet Yosef. Yosef, we learn in this week's parasha, was susceptible to speaking Lashon Hara. He spoke against his brothers. So therefore, Moshe realized that Yeshua has a certain hereditary tendency towards Lashon Hara, and he needs that extra chizuk. He did. He said that his brothers are eating Edmund Achai and then making fun of the...
Yosef,
that's what we're talking about. That, yeah, because Moshe davened for him. There's a sikha with it.
What would you thinking about? What kind of
Lashon Hara are you talking about? Lashon Hara knew which the Meraglim ended up saying. Yeah. The Rebbe talks about in a sikha the idea that, again, given that the whole thing was supposed to be a void of B'Koyach Atma, it's all supposed to be a Zerusha Dovah Fata, the whole thing is initiated by the Jewish people, it's not with the Eved's explicit consent and so forth, so for Moshe to daven for the Meraglim would kind of defeat the purpose. That would be a Zerusha Dovah Eva, and the whole point is we're trying to accomplish it with a Zerusha Dovah Fata. Except Yeshua, who was Moshe, I mean his Talmud, everything that Yeshua has comes from Moshe anyway, so for him to daven for him is not giving him anything extra that he didn't already have. The other 11 Meraglim didn't have the same closeness with Moshe Rabbeinu, so for him to daven for them would be giving them something they don't already have. It would be a Sidrus Adelaeva. For Yeshua, it's just a part of his personality, and therefore he could daven for him.
Do you
want to
tell the other
one
that they were against the
Meraglim,
or did they practice that also?
No idea. Yeah.
Probably they knew.
Yeah, could be, I don't know. Behind her, and this is why the Pasuk says, Avdi Kolev, my servant Kolev, the Eved says, Eikev Hoysa Ruach HaCheres Ima, because there was a different spirit with him, meaning a different spirit than the other Meraglim. And therefore, the Pasuk continues, that I'll bring him to the land where he came, namely Chevron. Chevron wound up being given to Kolev as his inheritance. Because he's the one who went there to daven by the Maris Machpelah, and therefore he... Some of the Mephoshim also point out that Ruach can also mean a different direction. So it means he had a different direction. He went a different direction than the other Meraglim. He went to Chevron and they didn't. Okay, the pasuk continues that in Chevron, v'shom achim anshesha v'tamai, the Gemara, that over there in Chevron there were the giants, achim anshesha and tamai. Why are they called that? Achimon is called that because miyumon shebechav, he was the right hand among his brothers, like the right hand is strong, he was the strong one among his brothers. Sheshai is called that shemesim asarat kishachsus, he makes the ground into pits, because he's so big and heavy that when he steps on the ground, it makes holes in the ground. How does Sheshai have to do with the word Shachzus? Rashi says over here maybe Sheshai is related to the word Shayish, like a marble pillar. When you set a marble pillar in the ground, it makes a hole in the ground. Talmai is called that Shemesim Asarat Flumim, because when he walked, he would make the ground into furrows. Again, he was so big and heavy that like there'd be furrows in the ground where he had walked. Davar Acher, another explanation, or maybe it's not a different explanation, maybe it's another thing that we should know about these three giants. Achimon bana Anos, Sheshai bana Olush, Talmai bana Talbush. That each of them built a major city.
They were good.
Yes, they were among the Anokim. They were among the giants. And
they were evil people? Or?
Well, they were among the Canaanim. They were among the people of Canaan who eventually had to be dispossessed. Yeah. Okay. The pasuk continues. Yulidei Anok. They were the descendants of the Anok. Why are they called that? Shema Anik and Chama became Osim, because the Anok literally means a necklace. So they necklace the sun with their height. They're so tall that when you look at them, it looks like the sun is like surrounding their neck. Post continues, V'chevron sheva shanim nivna. So the Chevron was built 7 years before Tzoyan in Mitzrayim. So my nivna, so what do you mean it was built 7 years? Ilema nivna samamish, do you literally mean that it was built 7 years before Tzoyan, the capital of Mitzrayim? Why? Why would a person build a house for his younger son before his older son? Kush is the oldest son of Chum. Mitzrayim is the second one. Canaan is the youngest of Chum's four sons. We're assuming that Chum built up the various places for his son, helped them get started in civilization in each of these places. Why would he build Chevron in Eretz Canaan before he built Tzoyan in Mitzrayim?
Mitzrayim
is older than Canaan, yeah. It means that Chevron was built up seven times as good. The quality of it was seven times as good as Tzion. Now let's consider what does that mean. In all of Eretz Yisrael, there's no place that's the least suitable for Troshim literally means like rocky. It's unsuitable for agriculture more than Chevron. We see that the dead are buried over there because like not fertile land. And among all the lands, there's none that's more fertile than Mitzrayim. Shnei Mekagan Hashem Keret Mitzrayim, as the pasuk says, like the garden of Hashem, like the land of Mitzrayim. And within Eretz Mitzrayim itself, the best quality is in Tzoyan. The pasuk mentions his princes, the princes of Malchus Yehuda, were going to Tzoyan to seek an audience with Pari. So we see that Tzoyan was the capital, and the capital is usually in the best part of the country. Even though Chevron is the worst part of Eretz Yisrael, and Tzion is the best part of Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim itself in general is a fertile land, nevertheless, Chevron is seven times as good as Tzion. Shows you the greatness of Eretz Yisrael.
In what?
In agricultural output, basically. Okay, the question is, Chevron and Tzion have a hobby. You're telling me that Chevron is a rocky area, it's not agricultural. The pasuk says, it happened at the end of 40 years. We learned in Nazir that this meant 40 years after the Jewish people first asked for a king. Avshalom says to his father, I want to go to Chevron and have a nedvah to bring to have a korban that I want to bring to the Eivishter. Why is he going to Chevron? But really, he went to Chevron in order to start his rebellion, everything away from Yerushalayim. But at least it had to be plausible that he's going to Chevron for a reason. Because he went to bring sheep from Chevron, because they were high quality over there. Vatanya, in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Elim Mimoyov, when they had to bring rams for Korbanos, they bring them from Moyov, because they're high quality ones. Kvasim, Chevron. From Evelian, yeah. And when they needed Kvasim, sheep, they would bring them from Chevron. So you see, Chevron is a very fertile area, that you have really good quality sheep from there. The answer is, that's just it. Me not, that's exactly it. Ida de Klisha Ara, since the land there is not very fertile, Avdur Baya, so they don't use it for agriculture, instead they use it for pasture land, they grow grass over there. The Shaman Kinyona, so the cattle over there become very, the cattle and the sheep and whatever become very fat and gezunt over there. But yes, it is Shrashim, it is rocky and not agricultural. No, not from the stones, but in other words, you can't plow there really, because you're going to break your plow all the time on the stones. So instead, they would give it over to grazing, and therefore the sheep there would be very fat.